Fox News Radio Studios in New York City, giving you opinions and facts with a positive approach. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's going to be a big hour. Mark Stein, always humorous, insightful, will be joining us in studio. Big Fox personality. Also doing shows with Dennis Miller these days. Brian Brenberg, the outstanding professor from the King's College, who will be telling us, bringing us inside the college process. And they'll be part of the fun, and as well as taking your calls at 1-866-408-7669. I do go over some of your emails and your correspondence that you got in touch with me during or right after the show yesterday. We'll start bringing them back the next day, which would be today. And keep in mind, you can always get in touch with me. Go to BrianKilmeade.com, and then there's a way to click on there and get in touch with me, as well as sign up for our newsletter, Kilmeade Condensed, recaps every show like this one. So let's get started.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
It just kind of goes to show how easily people can be swindled into things and how our culture values getting into prestigious universities so highly that people are willing to do things like this.
I guess so. I blame you, Mom. I blame you, Dad. That's the word from Lori Loughlin's daughter, Olivia Jade, after the college admissions scandal was exposed, destroying her social media career, and her endorsements are gone. And as predicted, the scandal is spreading. Up to 60 USC students involved. Now they're looking at men's lacrosse. They're involved. And now we go across town to UCLA, where a soccer player on an elite squad doesn't play soccer.
Number two.
A lot of people are asking because they love me, and they ask me about a man named John McCain. So I have to be honest, I've never liked him much. And I gave him the kind of funeral that he wanted. I don't care about this. I didn't get thank you. That's okay.
I don't know what to say. Two major mistakes muddle what could have been two great stories for the president. President Trump inexplicably keeps talking about John McCain in front of a military audience yesterday in Ohio, and George Conway, the husband of Kellyanne Conway, instead of talking about killing the caliphate, which has happened under his regime in Syria. And instead of talking about an outstanding economy that 71% of the American people say is great and 50-plus percent credit him, why go to McCain and Conway?
Number one.
Beto's asking us to shape him into a candidate because it's all about a cult of personality. This is the Seinfeld of candidacies. Seinfeld was a show about nothing. He's a campaign about nothing.
Oh, that is so true. So far, Mark Thiessen, he's got big crowds and a lot of media, but I don't know what's going on there. Now we got something new. Let him eat dirt. No, really. Beto O'Rourke, for inspiration after losing to Ted Cruz in the Senate race, actually ate New Mexican dirt. Add that to the list of joining of new things and different things, eclectic things. Remember, he joined a hacking group, a punk rock band, wrote a fiction book where he talked about the joy of running over children. Combine that with an unidentifiable positions on any subject, and I just wonder why the money and people keep flowing to him. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is getting a glimpse of the hurdles that await him when he gets into the race, and they're even talking about a possible running mate right out of the gate. And that's where we begin. First on Beto O'Rourke, I'm not kidding. He writes in a magazine, a glowing feature on him, that he would go and meet people and try to get a sense of whether he should run for president or not. And to get revitalized, he went to New Mexico, picked up dirt, and ate it. Listen, everyone does some different things. This is something I quite haven't heard from adults and from human beings. And they brought some home because he's a good provider and let his kids have some. I'm not sure if they took him up on it. But he continues to tour at a dizzying rate. To his credit, he's going everywhere. He's in Pennsylvania. He's in New Hampshire. He's going to other battleground states, going to South Carolina, going to speak in front of an African-American audience for the first time. But he doesn't really say anything. Cut to.
Oh, yeah. I am smart enough to know that there's so much more for me to learn. The only way for me to learn that is to show up in the communities I seek to serve.
He actually says, I want to listen to people and find out and shape myself into the candidate they want me to be. That's not the way it works. I mean, you're supposed to go out there and say, here's what I believe. This is what I know. This is what I will try to do. And here's how I'll try to do it. I didn't think there'd be a candidate actually getting in the stump going, I don't know. What do you think? That's essentially the perfect way to say it. He's basically the Seinfeld of candidates. Mark Thiessen nails it. Cut 11.
And this is the Seinfeld of candidacies. Seinfeld was a show about nothing. He's a campaign about nothing. I mean, the Washington Post literally reported that he is going around and asking voters to shape him into the presidential candidate they want him to be and help him come up with a vision. Most people run for president because they have a vision for the country. I mean, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, I mean, I don't think their ideas are very good. I think they're dangerous. But give them credit. They've been thinking for years about what they want to do if they get their hands on the levers of power in the Oval Office. Beto's asking us to shape him into a candidate because it's all about a cult of personality.
And it's the Seinfeld of candidates. That, I think, will stick. Meanwhile, he's walking around getting big money, got a big Obama donor, and he is getting big crowds, and he is does not have a job. So he could just campaign all day. And it's driving the other candidates nuts. Now, on Joe Biden, he has not gotten in yet. The last major name, probably the last name to not get in. And we've been waiting for him for a while, and he's leading in most of the polls. People recognize him. People like President Obama, or the Democrats do, and they want some more of that. Now, just keep in mind, he got some issues there. We don't know what's going on with him personally. We know that he's made some money. I have no problem with that. They said he can't be middle-class Joe and get $100,000 per speech. I'm fine. You wore most of your life. But he got a central location where his family can go. We know, too, that Hunter, his son, Hunter Biden, one of his sons, of course, they lost their mom when he was in his 20s, and he was able to remarry and do both, and he deserves a lot of credit. And to tell that story will be a plus. But now you have Peter Schweizer talking about Hunter. And without any international business experience, right after the vice president visited China, he walks off with an international business deal that will bring him millions. Listen to this. Cut 13.
Joe Biden was criticized in the latter parts of the Obama administration for going soft on Beijing, on the South China Sea, on trade, and on human rights. Look, it's very simple. In December of 2013, Hunter Biden flies on Air Force Two to Beijing, China, with his father. His father meets with Chinese officials. He's very soft on Beijing. The most important thing that happens 10 days after they return, and that's when Hunter Biden's small private equity firm called Rosemont Seneca Partners gets a $1 billion private equity deal with the Chinese government, not with the Chinese corporation, with the government.
So he's going to have to answer that. Any candidate, even on the Democratic side, worth his salt, has got to say, listen, we got to be tough on China. How can we do that? Explain the Hunter Biden deal. He also has some mysterious deals in Eastern Europe. Don't have the answer. But man, you talk about gluing after Trump. You think for a second Trump's not going to get somebody to look into that if Biden gets to him? And if these others actually want to win, they'll demand some answers on that. Meanwhile, sadly, the buzz among the Dems are the Supreme Court has two Supreme Court justices thanks to President Trump and don't have Merrick Garland thanks to Mitch McConnell. So we're going to pack the court and double the members, maybe even triple. Put age limits and term limits on them. And now you all seem to be singing that song. The problem with singing that song if you're Joe Biden is this question was brought up in your multi-decade career. The year is 1983. Cut 7.
President Roosevelt clearly had the right to send to the United States Senate and the United States Congress a proposal to pack the court. It was totally within his right to do that. He violated no law. He was legalistically absolutely correct. But it was a bonehead idea. It was a terrible, terrible mistake to make. And it put in question, for an entire decade, the independence of the most significant body, including the Congress, in my view, the most significant body in this country, the Supreme Court of the United States of America.
Joe Biden, are you going to walk that back? It's just the beginning. People think he's going to glide to the nomination, just have some intramural fights. It's going to be tough. If he's going against 14 opponents that are convicted on winning and not just mailing it in like Governor O'Malley last time or having fake candidates that really have no shot. So, listen, we have a lot to discuss. I want to do with Brian Brandenburg. I did not talk about the college scandal on purpose, but it is moving just like we predicted here to expand much wider than just the 50 that were indicted that include 9 coaches. This is and should really make you want to reevaluate the whole college process, where you go and what you'll do to get there. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. person, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Davina Isaacson, seen here leaving court Monday, was named in the federal indictment along with her husband. It says their oldest daughter got into UCLA after submitting fake soccer credentials. The university's website lists Lauren Isaacson is a midfielder on the 2017 team, but she was not pictured in the team photo. The site also says she was team captain of the Woodside Soccer Club from 2012 to 2016. But a club official tells CBS This Morning they have no record of her ever being there.
So guess what? She got on UCLA, had to show up for practice in the 2017 season, and this is an elite school, Division I school, and she never played a second of soccer. Fake bio, fake position, a lot of money. In fact, over 1,700 shares of Facebook was paid, and the father was picked up on an intercept saying, I just hope I don't end up on the front page of a newspaper. The answer is you are. Brian Brandberger's here, and he's... he's laughing in disbelief as chair of the program in business and finance at the King's College here in Manhattan. So, Brian, we always glad to have you on about the education as well as your finance background. But now we're talking about an admissions scandal. What's going on here?
Well, look, yeah, this is crazy. And I'm laughing not because I think it's funny. I'm laughing because this is my business. And I'm sitting here thinking about this is what our competitors, I'm at the King's College. Our competitors are doing these sorts of things. And how deep does it run? But, you think about this issue, Brian. Think about how much we idolize college education in this country. You want to understand why people are willing to go to these lengths. We've got this really inflated view of what a college education can do for you. And it's causing people to not only sacrifice tons and tons of money, we've talked about that, but their integrity as well. And I think what we're seeing here is we're really just at the tip of the iceberg on this.
What do you mean? Because you think so, the whole admissions process, they're putting them on non-revenue sports teams, sailing, soccer, women's lacrosse, men's. Yeah. In the USC case, now we're finding about men's lacrosse.
Yeah. What I think is going to happen here is you're going to get people starting to dig into how admissions works at colleges. Nobody really knows that on the outside, right?
You just get a letter.
It looks like a black box. You send all this information in. There's somebody there reading it. You assume they're making a good decision and you get a result. That's going to start to change because people are going to want to know who's reading this stuff. What exactly are they looking at? And by the way, how do they know the stuff that's on the page is true? Is there any investigation or are we just assuming anything a student tells you is true? And of course, what we're seeing, the answer is no. And it's not just on little stuff like were you in the National Honor Society. It's did you play the sport for 4 years that you claim to play?
And also to get in there, to get that, because evidently the coaches have much more power than I thought. I thought the coaches would have influence, say I could really use my – I know it takes a 98 to get in here. She's got a 92. Admissions staff, I just hope you understand what you would mean to our team. And the fact is she played at a high level. She traveled a lot. It was hard for her to study like the other kids.
Yeah.
But you didn't think the coach had caught carte blanche, and they seem to have had it at Harvard.
Well, and here's what happened.
At Yale, excuse me.
Yeah, so you get the coach saying Stanford. To the admission staff is, we've got to have her on the team. She's a key part of the team. I want to vouch for her. And these admission staffs, they're spending like 8 to 10 minutes probably on an application. That's literally how much time they're spending on it. They're saying, okay, coach, if you say so, we don't have the time to do the investigation here. If she's that kind of athlete and it's these reasons that justify her lower academic performance, fine. But you're right. There's an amazing amount of leverage these coaches have over the academic decision.
Brian Brandberg here. He's talking about his view of this whole process as the chair at the King's College. So, Brian, the other thing is, as you walk through campus, now if I have a USC degree, and people go, wow, USC degree, how much did your parents pay for that? That becomes a running joke. UCLA, a running joke. Stanford, you weren't that smart in school. I think you had an 88 average. How did you get in there?
Well, it calls into question the whole academic standing of a lot of these institutions. People start to ask, well, what exactly are you doing in the classroom? If these are the standards for getting in, if this is how easy it is to cheat to get into the school, how much of that is happening when students are taking classes? What are the grades from an institution like this even mean? And the fact is we already know that's an issue because employers out there are saying, don't tell me about your GPA. That's not going to tell me if you're the kind of person I want to hire.
So now the bigger question, is it worth it? Number one, if I have the grade, should I go? And the question is, if that school, NYU costs $74,000, George Washington University, similar. I think Syracuse was at 60, yours at 34.
Yeah.
Now, President Obama took control of the student loan system and really put no cap on it. Mm-hmm. So people go, I got into that school and I could pay for my dream school, but then they're done. And they have to, this monthly bill they can't afford.
Now, the average student is walking out of college with $37,000 in debt. You have to understand how much that constrains you. And it's not just about being able to buy a home or buy a car. It's about getting your financial house in order. Students aren't able to do that. So you're right, Brian, people have to think about college much more as an investment, and they've got to look at the cost and the benefit and make sure they're getting the preparation they need to get to pay off those loans.
So, you know, and Mitch Daniels, and he's now running Purdue, he said he looked in there like the OMB director, where to cut. These colleges say, oh, really? You're going to have student loans as high as you can? We're going to raise the tuition. Where is the transparency on why is that school $70,000? What am I getting for my money?
Yeah.
How do you constrain the price?
Well, what's happening is these schools are saying to attract students, it's not just about having great classes and great professors. They're talking now about what kind of palatial facilities can we build to make this a country club environment,
cost
right?
Cost money.
So it's got to be the gyms. It's got to be the cafeterias. It's got to be the rock climbing wall. It's got to be the lazy river running through campus. These are the kinds of things that inflate costs. Plus, you've got these armies of bureaucrats and administrators at the colleges because they're trying to administer all of these programs around diversity or inclusion, or we've got to make this place a safe space. We don't want anybody to be offended. And the amount of paperwork and bureaucracy with that is enormous. So when you're paying $78,000 to go to a college, you have to understand that's what you're paying. That's not going to the classroom, folks. That's going to the bureaucrats.
And Olivia Jade, who was a social media star, man, my kids knew her. I have a sophomore and a senior. She said, I didn't want to go to school. She evidently, according to Entertainment Tonight, is angry at her parents. She didn't know she was getting paid off to get in. She didn't want to go to begin with. She's on Instagram saying that. Isn't that interesting? The student mad at the parents.
Well, I mean, it just goes to show how much getting into college is actually about the parents justifying their own existence. The parents want that trophy. It's good for their social standing, and they'll do whatever they need to do to make that happen. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that kids don't know this is going on, but I'll take them at their word. But parents,
in some cases, clearly, the other case, they did know.
I mean, yeah, in some cases they did know. But what's happened with college is it's become as much about stoking parents' own egos as it is about an education. It has become something, it's become a piece of paper you want on the wall because it says who you are. It's an identity thing. It's not an educational tool. It's not about getting a job. It's not about being productive in society. It's about getting yourself into the club. And parents want into that club as much as students do. And I think that's, and by the way, that starts in pre-K, Brian. That's not just college.
Go to the King's College. You'll be happy.
There you go. I love, that's the best thing we said all day.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, I don't know him. He's a whack job. There's no question about it, but I really don't know him. I think he's doing a tremendous disservice to a wonderful wife. Kellyanne is a wonderful woman, and I call him Mr. Kellyanne. The fact is that he's doing a tremendous disservice to a wife and family. She's a wonderful woman.
Yeah, that's the president yesterday. Just you have to suspend disbelief. He's going. Mark Stein is with us in studio, and we're just listening to the president of the United States going off on George Conway, who's been taking shots at the president for a year and a half. He is the husband of Kellyanne Conway, the one staple who's always been around the president, speaking for the president in the most hostile of circumstances, the most dire of times and the best of times. So George Conway's talking about the president's mental health. And first it was Brad Parscale, who handles the president's reelection campaign. And then it was the president retweeting and then speaking out. So Kellyanne Conway, believe it or not, is taking the president's side on Politico. She says, the president is obviously defending me. He could privately say to me, honey, you're a distraction. We love you. You'll always be a part of the family, but go be with your kids. They need you. Go make $1 million an hour. Go do that, honey. It's the opposite. She also said her effectiveness as Trump's counselor has not been affected by Trump slamming her husband. Why would it affect my job? Hasn't everybody tried to push me out already? And here I am, stronger than ever. You're looking at it the wrong way. I don't know if you have anything in your repertoire that reminds you of this, but I don't.
No.
The season two of Billions, actually.
Yeah. No, that's what it is. Except that underneath it all, you know that there's actually something really sad going on. She is the great survivor of this administration. She helped get him elected. She's been there throughout. Unlike all the other people who came in January of 2017, they didn't all fall by the wayside in 2 or 3 months. And the strain of this must be enormous. I was at some event last year, I think it was, and Kellyanne and I were both getting awards, and she'd brought along her young kids, who are grade school kids. And we're all sitting at the table. She's proud of her service to the president, and she wants her children to be proud of her service to the president. And there is obviously some kind of terrible fissure in her household, and I don't know how she...
You could see it then?
Let's put it this way. I thought it was a little bit strange that he wasn't there with her to receive this award. But, you know, people can draw their own conclusions on that. Maybe she drew her conclusions as to, you know, why I was where I was. But at the heart, it's basically the partisan divide in this country now is so vicious that it can cleave households. And there's some, and we can do, late night comics can do jokes about it all, and it can all seem funny when you're tweeting about it, but at its heart, there's actually something desperately sad about this.
Well, look at the Trump family. You're going to tell me that Eric and Don Jr., who were looked up to and welcomed by business as well as Hollywood, do you think they like 50% of the country despising them?
No. And I think what's...
And Ivanka?
No, and there has to be a way of managing political differences that doesn't require... Do you know, in the era of Bush derangement syndrome, so-called, people mostly, the left mostly directed it against Bush. Bush was a moron, Bush was an idiot, Bush stole the election. Something, we've gone beyond that now.
And by the way, Mark doesn't believe that, nor do I.
No.
But we've
taken it to the next level with the left now, in that they're extending Trump derangement syndrome, not just to Trump,
right,
but to the 50% of the country who support him.
So Mark, here's the President of the United States. While these Democratic candidates are trying to out-liberal each other with the Electoral College, with get paid for doing nothing, with the Supreme Court packing, with late-term abortion, the President of the United States has got these great economic numbers, 71% of the country happy with the economy, and he goes into Ohio smartly and talks about a tank plant that's been converted. And instead of taking on the unions, he says, I need the UAW to help us out here and reopen Lordstown, and what's General Motors doing? Do it now.
Yeah.
Great. But here's what everyone walked away with. Cut 17.
A lot of people are asking, because they love me, and they ask me about a man named John McCain. And if you want that to tell you about, should I or not? Yes? Yes? So I have to be honest, I've never liked him much. Hasn't been for me. I've really probably never will.
And that was the beginning. It got worse from there. John McCain, who passed away 6 months ago, the president took on George Conway before he left the White House, and then took on John McCain. And by the way, I read the whole speech.
Yeah.
It was a non sequitur.
Yeah.
And he's in front of a military audience.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. He killed the caliphate.
Yep.
He's in this last throes. He adjusted the troop development, so we're not abandoning the area any longer. This was a week to high-five and say, man, the president's got it down. Mark, bring me back. I don't get it.
Well, it's an ancient common law principle that you can't defame the dead. And not even Trump can defame the dead. So in other words, he can't put a glove on the guy because the guy is 6 feet under. And that's it. Whatever he can't get a rise out of the guy. And so there's a certain pointlessness about this. But Trump has been this way since the first day I saw him on stage in Burlington, Vermont. It was like a fantastic route. I've never seen anything like this. He comes out, 1 minute he's talking about the Iranian nuclear program. Next he's talking about how Macy's stock has tanked since they stopped carrying Trump ties. And in his head, they loom equally, the Iranian nuclear program and Macy's stock tanking. And that's the way he is. But as you said, the other side of the story here is that Democrats are like outwoking each other at an insane rate. So they're basically tearing up every section of the Constitution now. Instead of amending the Constitution with the Electoral College and the Supreme Court packing and this, that, and the other, they might as well just tell us, you know, is there actually a sentence in there you'd like to keep? And as they do this, everyone is getting distracted with stuff about McCain and George Conway. Most people haven't heard. 99% of the country has never heard of George Conway. And I don't understand this, because there are people who love Trump, and there are people who hate Trump, and then there are people in the middle who are a bit tonally queasy about Trump. And I don't put it any higher than that. But they like the economy and they like other things, but they're tonally a bit unsettled.
Without the queasy, the president doesn't win.
Absolutely.
So you should understand that. You could be the biggest fan of the president. Your last name could be Trump.
Yeah.
Just know that these two statements don't help you, and the criticism is more than what you don't have to leap. I watch some of these shows and I go, really? You're finding something to criticize when there was nothing there? He gave them a reason not to cover the tanks being made in the conversion of the factory. And when you talk about crazy, this governor of Washington who wants to run on Inslee, who wants to run on a green economy, he's actually talking about taking the 21 states, forming an alliance, and maybe separating from the country.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how crazy. So what you do, if you want to bring that up at the tank factory, I just want to tell you what I'm running against.
Yeah.
I not only do I think want to make country great, I actually think I think we do a lot of things great. And our foundation was great. And these people are tearing it up. Not go after John McCain because of a dossier.
No, and I agree with the thing about it is last time round, Trump was funnier on any of the Democrat candidates than anyone I've ever seen. He did a riff on Martin O'Malley, who under no circumstances would he ever be running against, who was the third guy. Do you remember? He was the other guy on stage apart from Bernie when Hillary was late back
Governor
from
Maryland.
The ladies' room. And he does like this 15 minutes of shtick on. He could, any one of these guys with any one of these crazy ideas. Like, we got people now talking essentially about the abolition of citizenship, about seceding from the nation, about what did you say this morning? 38,000 judges overrule 27,000 judges.
Yeah.
And so that objection
is sustained.
Yeah. And, that sounds like a smart idea to me. And he would be funnier on that than anybody. I mean, this is comedy gold dropping into his lap.
Yeah, it's got to be somebody to be able to say, yeah, I know you're thinking about talking about McCain. Don't. Senator Lindsey Graham has been invaluable to the president internationally, domestically. Because he tells it like it is, and I think he really respects the president. Listen to what he said. Cut 24.
I think the president's comments about Senator McCain hurt him more than they hurt the legacy of Senator McCain. I'm going to try to continue to help the president. And a lot of people are coming to John's defense now that called him crazy and a warmonger. So it's kind of interesting to see the politics of how this dispute's being used to bash Trump by people who are against both Trump and McCain. I've got to know the president. We have a good working relationship. I like him. I don't like it when he says things about my friend John McCain.
Yeah.
That's basically, I'm not, arrogant enough to think I was friends with John McCain, but I was friendly with him for 10 years. The first time I got to know him, I was doing UFC, and I was doing sports.
Right.
And they go, there's this senator from Arizona that's fighting against UFC. He says it's too brutal. It's barbaric. I'm going to stop it. I was thinking to myself, who's John McCain? Is that that war hero?
Yeah.
And then little did I know, I end up working at Fox and working here. So he always made a difference wherever he went. He was in Bush's face. He was in Clinton's face. He was all over Obama because he was about military first.
Well,
and country first.
And the thing about him is he had a vicious streak, which I actually found quite enjoyable on the occasions I met him. He was professional and he'd always pretend to be nice. He'd do jokes like, I don't know how, when you're guest hosting, I don't know how you keep that accent up for 3 hours. He had all his little shtick that he'd do. He was super professional. But he also had this actually very sincere vicious streak, which I think is fun. I remember the press conference where he was supposed to endorse Bush, and he said something like, "Governor Bush will be more than adequate as president." And it was because they loathed each other. And I said in a British newspaper at the time, "I haven't seen this month much warmth since the Prince and Princess of Wales's last tour of Australia," because it was like Charles and Di in the latter phases, and that was who he was, and it was genuine. But there is no point picking a fight with a corpse. There's absolute... And Lindsey Graham...
That's the line of the day.
And Lindsey Graham, by the way, is the professional here. Lindsey Graham is someone who has differences with the president, and there are things he agrees with the president on. And he behaves like a professional senator of his party who supports the president's policies and steps back when the president starts going extra tweety. And I wish actually more senators were like Lindsey Graham, that they just said, well, look, you know, I'd never heard of Twitter until someone said Donald Trump is on Twitter. It's not a thing I do, don't care about it, but the policies I'm fine with, and that's all I want to talk about.
Doing exactly what he said. Yeah. Trump's doing exactly what he said he's going to do, but some of the things along the way allow his critics to tee off, and these are two. Mm. My hope is it stops. Here's the other thing. John McCain was petty in his funeral. He made sure that Trump wasn't there. Everybody that spoke took shots at President Trump, including Meghan McCain. Unlike the Bushes, when 41 passes away, they have just as much anger towards the president. They invited him. They took care of him. Mm. President turned around and said, come to Blair House. Make sure you stay. He came and visited. Yep. They brought him over. So I just thought, you're not going to win taking him on, especially when it brings up the Vietnam comparison. One was shot down and held prisoner. The other one had heel spurs that haven't been confirmed. But why would you want a spotlight on that?
But you know something, Brian? It's a basic rule in public disputes that you don't punch down. And you know this. Anyone who does what you do, you know, like there's some guy who hosts the overnight show on WZZZ AM
who hates me. Yeah.
In Dead Moose Junction, Maine, who hates you and is tweeting up another loser show from Brian Kilmeade. You don't go on, oh my God, and you're tweeting straight at him all morning long. You can't get more pointlessly punching down than punching at the dead. It's just not something. It's not something a living person actively engaged in the business of the nation should be doing.
Which both of us, that's something we have in common. We're both alive. Right?
that's right.
The only thing.
I think I said I barely after that song you played this morning.
Okay. Hey, listen, we're going to be back in a moment with more of Mark Stein, who plays himself for at least this half hour.
Holding our politicians' feet to the fire, no matter who they are. That's Brian Kilmeade. You think this is the Brian Kilmeade Show?
We need comprehensive immigration reform. If you are in this country now, you must have the right to pay into to Social Security, to pay your taxes, to pay into the local school system, and to have a pathway to citizenship. That must happen.
Yeah, fantastic. And don't close the border. We'll just become the United States of Guatemala, right. Ecuador, Nicaragua. That's Kirsten Gillibrand trying desperately to matter, Mark Stein. Social Security for illegals, that's a new one.
Well, wait. Let's go back. She said comprehensive immigration reform. I'm an immigrant, and I actually pay into Social Security, and I pay for my local school district and all the things she mentioned, because I made the mistake of coming here legally and filling in the paperwork.
What's wrong with you?
No, I'm crazy. What the hell was I thinking? And she's basically saying none of that matters. And I'm, you know, at a certain point, Americans have to think seriously about this. Very few legal immigrants support this illegal immigration.
Do you know the president's ratings going up with Hispanics?
Yeah, yeah. Because for the same reason. Because if you are here legally, the massive underground remorseless annexation of more and more of the economy hurts you. Nobody, we're looking at a world where by 2030, they estimate a third of all jobs worldwide will have been automated. The idea of just having open borders so people can move here for the Social Security right. is insane.
And there's no doubt about it. They're going to have a robot doing my job, but just not yours, because no one can replicate
you. Yeah, I thought it was, actually. lifelike.
No, I'll let you touch me in the break. Nobody's got off to a more sensational start than Mr. O'Rourke. Mm. So Beto O'Rourke is somebody that has now gotten more positive press coverage, is bigger crowds than anybody else, and said almost nothing. He has traversed the upper Midwest. He's been all over Iowa. He today is going to South Carolina and go in front of an African-American audience. He has said absolutely nothing. And what we know about him is crazy. Yeah. He in high school, he writes this novel where he talks about the joy of running over children. Right. Punk rock band. Okay, that was your interest. And now we find out to regenerate himself, he went to New Mexico and ate dirt and brought home.
Yeah. He's like almost a parody of rich white privilege, which I don't... It's not a concept. White privilege is not a concept because I live in a broken-down part of northern New Hampshire where all the white guys are like broken-down losers. And but the idea... So I don't accept the idea of white privilege because you see ruined lives all over the country. But there is such a thing as rich white privilege, and he's almost like... If he were a minor member of the Bush family, if he were like George H.W. W. H. 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 W. Bush the fourth, and he was saying, "Oh yeah, I like skateboarding," and then I go home and I write a fantasy
about
running over the poor kids, right. And then I go to New Mexico and eat dirt.
Beto Part Two, I can't wait for it. Mark Stein, thanks so much.